not saying I'm gonna change the world. I do guarantee that I will spark a brain that will change the world. Welcome to the Mookie Mel Show.
Welcome everyone, welcome to the Mookie Mel Show. We got another great episode lined up for y'all. Got my boy Beezy in the building today. We got a few, you know, heavy hitters to speak on, but per usual, it'll be some great conversation.
I'm very excited. Today,
episode 5. Again, I appreciate y'all coming back. I appreciate my new viewers, and I just want to really exaggerate and elaborate that we have everyone committed to listening, even if you don't, you know, agree or necessarily feel the same with some of these opposing opinions. Let's just commit to listening.
Today, we're just going to jump right into it. Episode 5, we're going to talk about the foundation of education.
Unfortunately, we all are aware that education is now a monopoly. We're forced to partake in it and play a role regardless if we feel that we're a willing and active participant or not. Whether, you know, it's sending our kids to private school, public school, charter school, paying property taxes, state taxes, anything of that nature helps the beast of the monopoly of education. Today, we're very fortunate to have my boy Beezy speak on the show. I think he's going to provide some excellent insight in terms of an educator's perspective. Beezy graduated from Dartmouth with my brother a few years ago. But Beezy, go ahead and tell the people a little bit about you, man.
It's your boy Beezy, you know, Brandon Gunter, now known as Mr. Gunter, recently Coach Gunter. I grew up in Houston, Texas, 5th Ward. Went to school, the charter school, low-income charter school, Yes Prep Public Schools. Went there from about 8th grade to 12th grade, then went on to Dartmouth, like my boy Mook said, with his brother Tyler, really good friend of mine. Then I graduated from Dartmouth and came back and wanted to teach at my old alma mater. Not at the exact school, but one of the sister schools in the same district, so still teaching low-income charter school students. Did Teach for America. It's actually my 3rd year now, so I'm going to Teach for American alum now. But I love it, man. Love teaching. Love working with the kids. And something I plan on doing for at least the foreseeable future, man.
Nice. No, it's I feel it's very, very commendable and honorable, Beezy. Especially, you know, you're saying you being from the 5th Ward, not only seeing what higher education can do, but you went to one of the most prestigious schools in the country, yet alone the world. So for you to feel or even be compelled to come back and give back your time, effort, and energy, man, hats off to you. But all the one reason why I wanted to bring you on the show, because you can kind of see both ends of the field, you know, kind of both sides of the fence where the grass may be greener. And I think you could provide a lot of good insight and perspective for my listeners, individuals who may have a few questions on our topic of foundation of education. But we're going to jump right into it today, y'all. There's no sugarcoat. There's none of that. Beezy's ready for action. I'm ready for action. So let's jump right into it, y'all, with S1 and Scholars. So, Beezy, I know you were saying you're an educator, but what grades are you teaching again these days?
Currently teaching 6th and 7th grade.
Okay.
Middle school, Young Minds.
Nice. I know that can definitely have its handful of challenges. You know, I used to work in a nonprofit myself about a year ago now with high school kids. So I can only imagine working with middle schoolers every day must be like for you.
Yeah, very, very crucial age group right there.
So I wanted to state this question to you, man. Although children are very impressionable, at what level of schooling do you believe their teachers play the largest influence on them and why?
Well, first of all, just children in general, they're very impressionable, right? Since birth, they're trying to figure out, you know, who they are, how to move about, right? So they're constantly learning from everything that they observe, right? Whether it's social media, whether it's their parents, whether it's their peers, they're always soaking up information, right? But for me, I think the most crucial age group would probably be that age where I'm teaching right now, like I say, 6th and 7th grade, simply because at that point, you know, in middle school, they're very kind of like just going through the in elementary school, they're very, you know, young, going through the motions, just kind of doing what they're told. It's when they reach that middle school, 6th grade, really in 7th grade age, that they kind of start really trying to find themselves, really seeking affirmation from their peers. And they're really impressionable, I think, the most at their age, right? Because they're still developing. They're still getting seeking approval from their peers. Right. So I think that's the most delicate age group just because of how they're still developing right there.
Yeah, no, I hear that. And just kind of to, you know, correlate with some of the points you were making, you know, this is middle school is pretty much the age where children kind of determine how they will pursue the rest of their academic or educational career. So it's kind of like the aptitude, you know, they set the bar now for how they will perceive their challenges in terms of education and moving forward. But so why do you think middle school is more of a crucial time than high school?
I think middle school is more of a crucial time than high school because, first, when you look at middle school versus high school is the time where their grades are really going to matter. Their extracurriculars are really going to matter. That's the time that focuses on, you know, what have you done? What are your grades? That's when you're building your GPA. That's the time where, you know, colleges and things like that, that's where they're going to look for to see the work that you've done, right? But middle school is where you're kind of forming those habits. You're forming the type of person you're going to be, the kind of crowd you're going to be in with, right? You're really making those decisions in middle school. And so even though the bigger effect and impact is going to come in high school, you're actually molding those kids and they're becoming who they're going to become in middle school. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I hear you. That makes sense. You're kind of saying, you know, you're prepping them for the successful habits.
Yeah, because once you get into the high school and things like that, a lot of times kids are already set in their ways. Right. Not saying you can't change them, but the needle's probably only going to move so much at that point, right? So hopefully you can catch them earlier and start to build those skills that they need, because when they're most impressionable, that's when you can see the most growth. And it's interesting as well because a lot of this growth I don't see myself, right? Because my school is interesting because it goes from 6th through 12th grade. So a lot of the skills that I try to build in them in 6th and 7th grade, it really seems like it's going in one ear, not the other. But then it's not till they're in high school when they really start to display the things that they've learned, those traits, right? So it's an interesting dynamic. They're getting them in middle school, but they're really exhibiting them in high school.
I hear what you're saying. And I mean, you know, obviously it has to take some level of maturity and, you know, the brain to develop a certain way. So I get that. And it's funny that you say that's the rewarding part because, you know, like you're saying, these changes may happen, but you won't even notice. So I think it's kind of like a leap of faith from your perspective to try to bring it every day and make sure you instill the right characteristics. But yeah, I think I agree with what you're saying in terms of high school. You know, once you're at that age, you're kind of set in your ways. Not necessarily set, but okay. Well, in high school, though, you get the chance to decide whether or not you're going to college. Do you think kids determine whether or not they're going to college in middle school?
I don't think kids determine it. Here's the thing. You say you get to determine whether or not you're going to go to college. That's just a simple whether or not I'm going to go, right?
Right.
Before you can even determine whether or not you're going to go to college, do you even have the opportunity to go to college, right? You can't just say I'm going to go to college, right? You have to meet a certain level of credentials or what have you to be eligible even to go to college, right? So middle school is the time where you're building those habits so that you can go on that trajectory once you're in high school to say, okay, can I even go to college? Do I have the skills to even get me there, right? So by the time you make the decision on whether or not you're going to go, by then you would have even had to be like accepted or rejected or waitlisted, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it might be too late by then.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you alluded to this a little earlier in terms of, you know, you try to prepare your kids for a lot of certain things that you may not see. But what do you find to be the most fulfilling part of being an educator for middle school kids?
You're saying this from my perspective or from their perspective?
From your perspective.
Okay. For me, the most fulfilling part, and it's interesting, you kind of alluded to this earlier, man. It's something I talk to people about a lot. The day-to-day grind of teaching is grueling. Like, every day, you got to think these are middle school kids, right? They're developing. They're seeking affirmation from their peers. They're changing physically, hormonally. They're trying to find themselves. There's a lot going on. And that's just developmentally. Then you have to think about, well, what's going on in their household? What's going on in their neighborhood? What's going on in their thought process, you know? And then social media now, gaming, like everything's so connected now, right? It's not like you can just flip a switch and say, hey guys, we're in class right now. I mean, that's the goal, but they still have lives. And so just dealing with the day-to-day grind of everything's teaching's hard, man. It's a lot of work. You gotta prepare every day. You gotta deal with discipline and whatever the kid might have going on. Maybe the kid didn't eat that day, or you know, whatever the case is. And so going through it, it's kind of like you're running a marathon every day, and it's really grueling and hard. And a lot of times you're just exhausted at the end of the day. And how I was telling you, a lot of times I don't get to see, you know what I'm saying, the rewards right away. Something I'm doing might not have bear any fruit until they're in high school. And for me, the most rewarding part is when I step back and really think about the work that I've done and how much growth my students have shown. And that's the best part for me, just watching kids grow into better people and develop, right? Because this is my third year teaching now. So I've seen kids that I've had in sixth grade who were just completely off the wall, always getting in trouble, not caring about school. And now they're actually starting to, you know, turn a corner. And I don't see them getting in trouble. When they see me, they're very respectful individuals. You know, seeing the growth that the kids make. Right. And that's the most rewarding part for me. And that's what keeps me going every day. But like I say, it's not something that always gets seen day to day. Sometimes you just got to step back and see the bigger picture and, you know, remind yourself why you do it.
No, I hear you, man. And hats off to you, because I know I'd be frustrated if I didn't see instant success, especially in the world we live in today. You know, we order some food and want it right now. Like, that's kind of where we're caught up in our modern day society. If we don't see something instantaneous, it's almost a failure to us. So I commend you, bro, to sticking with committing to these kids every day and bringing your hard hat and, you know, trying to instill some of these characteristic traits that, you know, will help them become successful in life.
Yeah, and just going off what you just said there, right, you want instant gratification in today's society. Well, you're saying you want that now, but think about how long you've been, you know, on earth and what you went through in school and how much technology has changed in these things. This instant gratification thing is really like a more recent phenomenon almost. And think about kids who are growing up with this constant instant gratification, right? And how that affects them in school. Like, there are a lot of kids who struggle in school and they may not get things instantly, right? You may not get a math problem right away. And that's what I teach math. And one of the big things that I'm trying to push with my students right now, and just kind of as a district, is this idea of having a growth mindset, right? You want to learn from your failures and use them as opportunities for mistakes. You don't just want to shut down. You don't want to think, hey, I'm not a math person, I'm not going to get that. Hey, I'm not, you know, maybe I'm a math person, this is easy. You don't want to have that mindset. You want to know that you can do all things. And if you do make a mistake, you want to be able to learn from those mistakes, right? And so it's very interesting trying to figure out how to navigate that with students, especially in today's society.
I hear that. And man, just being able to sit down and speak with you, not only does it sound like, you know, you're changing these kids' life, but these kids are changing your life. You know, you and I love to joke, and we may be some quote-unquote immature guys for our age. But man, I can definitely see how these kids have pouring wisdom into your life, man, and that's powerful.
I kind of want to digress though. So, you know, you say it's an everyday thing. It's an everyday grind that you have to bring in and make sure that these middle school children are on task. But what are some of the traits that you make sure you try to push and instill in these kids on an everyday basis?
One thing on an everyday basis, one, just generally, like I said, with the, having that growth mindset, right? I'm constantly telling them, hey, we can't get frustrated. We can't just give up. We got to keep it going, right? And at the same, along those same lines, even with the kids who are seemingly, you know, just flying through everything, right? It's important for them to also understand that life won't always be that way, right? If you flew through everything your entire life, once you get to a challenge, you might say, oh, well, maybe this is not for me, right? Because you haven't experienced it yet. You don't know how to embrace those challenges. So definitely having that growth mindset, having that grit, having that resilience are things that I always, always, always try to push in all of my students. And then a big one, too, is just being, you know, respectful, right? Respect each other, respect your family, respect your teachers, respect your area, right? Right? Places just aren't naturally dirty, right? People dirty them up. You don't go to a nice neighborhood. It's not because, you know, people are there constantly picking up trash, even though there might be, right? But people just, you aren't littering, right? So there's, that stuff comes from somewhere. So just really respect, resilience, having that growth mindset, sticking to it, right? And knowing that we can grow. Those are probably the biggest things that I try to push and instill in them on a daily basis.
I hear it. I respect it. You see what I did? But man, that's tough because even adults these days, you know, that's something I make a point to every time say on my show, let's commit to listening. And even though, you know, although we say it, you know, we may not respect each other's opinions or ideals or, as you were saying, even areas of living. So that's powerful, BZ, and thank you for being an educator. Let's now transition into S2, sports. S2 in sports. So, BZ, I know you're a newly acquired middle school basketball coach. How's that going for you?
Oh, man, it's another grind. Yeah, man, I ain't got a lot of experience, man, so trying to pick the brains of some more experienced individuals like yourself, other ballers I know. But really, man, right now it's just trying to get my team together, man. I remember how much I loved playing basketball when I was young and, you know, how much it did to me, how much I learned, just values playing. So trying to instill those same type of values in my students, right, and hopefully see it translate, you know, inside the classroom, inside their lives and help them become better men, man.
Yeah, no, I definitely wanted to commend you on that, man. As you said, you know, you don't have much experience, but, you know, sports oftentimes correlates directly to so many challenges and examples we've learned throughout life that I think you're a perfect candidate to be a basketball coach, you know, just because the amount of respect you receive from your kids, just in any teaching aspect, you know, so they're bound to listen to you. But with that being said, you know, I know you're no Oak Hill of middle schools or anything, so this question may not necessarily pertain to you directly, but how should middle school top-tier athletes be compensated for being recruited at such a young age?
Oh, man. Really, bro, when it comes to that question, I really have no idea, man, honestly. I was never really in a school that was just big in sports in general. All my schools were really so high, you know, education based, that sports was just kind of like something on the back burner, something we could try to see if we could get enough kids to even go out for, you know. So
right.
I don't really know a lot about the upper echelon of sports as far as like a Oak Hill or even like some AAU or stuff like that, right? I don't even know about a lot of that stuff.
In a sense to me, man, you know, I kind of knew that going in. That's why I wanted to make sure I stayed this question. But it should be like that, especially at this age or level. We're talking about middle school, you know, like the education should be first. So the fact that some of these kids are even drawing collegiate attention, I think is a red flag to even begin with. You know, secondly, when putting pressure on kids of this age, what are we necessarily telling these kids about themselves when they fail in said field of craft? You know, let's say little Johnny is an amazing baseball player. He can throw 70 or 80 miles an hour in seventh grade, and he's being recruited by some of the top recruits. But let's say by the time Johnny is a junior in high school, he blew out his shoulder and can no longer throw the ball. Is Johnny any less of an individual because he's no longer practicing his athletic craft? Question mark.
Johnny's definitely not any less of an individual. I think with something like that, Johnny possibly definitely had some high expectations and feel like he didn't meet him right, like he's a letdown or something like that. But I think it's important for him to realize, you know, if he's going to be training like that in baseball, he's probably acquired a ton of, you know, essential skills, right? He's hard work, commitment, discipline, sticking to a regimen, things like that. And I think it's important to realize, like, those type of skills can be transferable. You know, see, what else are you passionate about, Johnny? What else would you like to go into to be able to transfer those skills? And but I do, you know, I'm sure I acknowledge the fact that, you know, those high expectations and letdown probably has a lot of lingering effects maybe on his mindset or how he feels like he's perceived by other people, right? Like, you might think yourself as a failure, how they meet expectations. And that's with anything, right? Maybe my parents wanted me to be something other than a teacher, right? Like, maybe you went to Dartmouth while you're teaching little kids, right? Like, anybody can teach is a thing that a lot of people often see or say, you know? But, like, it's a very grueling, demanding field of work, undervalued, you know, I think. And so that could also translate to maybe how, you know, young Johnny is when he's not becoming the next whoever baseball star.
I hear you. And, I mean, it definitely could play a large role on some of these young individuals' mental. So I think, you know, I digress in my comment earlier that I think you're perfect to be a coach because, as you're just stating, you know, you have to make sure these kids understand that these are life traits, not just for their athletic abilities. But, you know, oftentimes we see these kids fall short and they think just because they're no longer fulfilling their athletic requirements, there's something short of an individual, and man, that's oftentimes not the fact. So, okay, again, this may not be applicable to you, but what would be a good system or form of reimbursement for some of these top-tier recruits who are in middle school?
Maybe thinking about, you're saying, like, as if we were to, like, pay them in a way, or like give them something for their services,
kind or of something, man. Like, these kids, this is exploitation at its finest. This is like a sweatshop almost, you know. Like, these are middle school kids. How are they able to be recruited at this level by collegiate recruiters, you know? To me, I think, you know, the NCAA should relook at this. I know, you know, this is almost every blue moon that you find a middle school kid being recruited, but it does happen. It does happen, and when it does, I think we should acknowledge it and try to, you know, fulfill this family's needs or obligations if things change in terms of athletic standings. I think that these kids should, I think an account or some type of trust fund should be set up for these individuals for some type of collegiate waiver. So let's say, you know, you're in eighth grade, you're one of the best basketball players in the country. Anytime a college gets in contact with you by any form of contact, they should have to put some amount of dollars in a collegiate fund for you that you can pay for your college expenses with by some form. So let me go a little deeper in that. Let's say, you know, BZ's an eighth grader. He's one of the best recruits. LSU sends him maybe a handwritten letter. For that handwritten letter, for them to reach out to BZ, they need to then put $500 into his trust fund for you to move forward in college. And I think that fund should not be accessible for you unless it's used for higher education. So you don't necessarily have to be an athlete, but then it'll still keep education, one, a priority, but two, it'll also, you know, you can use it as fuel to the fire to continue to pursue higher education, even if you're no longer pursuing an athletic career.
Gotcha. Something like that could be good, or maybe just even at the time, maybe if you could give them stuff that they're interested in, maybe like some extra basketball gear or some, I don't know if they play video games, get them a new video game or something like that. Like something that a middle school kid would actually, you know, enjoy, I guess, at that time. But right. Also, the monetary thing could be good as well if you know, if there's being monetary gain made on behalf of that kid, right? Like how I definitely think, and I even don't know a lot about this as well, but I definitely think collegiate athletes should definitely be compensated for how much revenue they bring in for those schools, But, you know, if a middle school student is doing that same type of thing for their program or for some AAU team or what have you, then, yeah, they should receive some type of, you know, compensation as well if other people are you know, profiting off of their success.
Word. Well, let's go ahead and keep it pushing forward and move to S3 with social. So in S3 of the social today, Beezy, I got a few questions. We're going to cut the social a little short today just because of the nature and the organic flow of the conversation. But first, I wanted to ask you, should property tax be solely for the schools in the surrounding area?
That's an interesting question. I think it's good. It's good for the schools in the surrounding area. But I think really, we should try to spread them out like throughout the city, you know, because obviously, some properties are worth way more in certain areas. Therefore, their taxes are going to be a lot more, and those schools are going to be bringing in a lot more revenue, right? So for when you get to, you know, more lower income neighborhoods, their schools aren't as great, maybe don't have as many resources, right? So I think you should try to spread the wealth just so everyone can try to, you know, have the equal opportunity to have those good resources and facilities. So
I hear that. And I wanted to make sure I asked you that question, especially from your perspective as an educator. I know your insight will be given a different weight. As the, you know, the job force kind of changes and develops, you know, as our modern day society changes, what's going on with vocational schools and why are they disappearing if the job force is now geared towards more individual and specific traits?
I think the thing with vocational schools is really in today's society, I feel like really the big push is to get college, right? I mean, that's how I push my students as well, because we're living in a society where it's been constantly expressed that, hey, you know, college graduates make this much more than high school graduates. And essentially, if you want to try to have a chance at a better life, you need to go to college. And so I think with so much pressure on having that set path, that's kind of led away from vocational jobs. And the other thing with that, as a society, we kind of were moving in a more, you know, technologically advanced place. Technology has increased so much now, but we were kind of moving towards getting there, right? So you needed people that can be able to create this technology, right? And so you kind of had to move away from vocational because you needed people who qualified to be like engineers and software designers, right? You know, things like that. And right. So the need at that point was for people to be able to handle those high skill, high need jobs. And even now, I think even with a lot of trades and things like that, a lot of jobs are being replaced by technology and definitely moving in that direction, right? A lot of the low jobs, I was talking to someone about this last night, actually. Think about when you go to Walmart now. When I go to Walmart now, there's 20 lanes, right, of like registers, but then only maybe two or three of them are open, and right, there's only two or three workers, and then they have like a ton of self-checkouts, and then you just have one person over there making sure, you know, if something goes wrong, I'll go over there and punch in a code, right? And so a lot of those jobs are being replaced, you know, by technology.
So, man, I gotta ask you this question. You kind of pertain to it in your response and what you tell your students in terms of, you know, college is a way to get these tailored jobs, such as, you know, skilled jobs or engineer or this, that, or these high paying jobs. So I have to ask you, why aren't educators paid more, and how do you feel about that?
Oh, man, let's make sure the right people hear this. But I think why educators aren't paid more is just because how we're valued in society. Like I was telling you earlier, I think education is viewed as a thing where that pretty much anyone can do, right? Not saying that is the case. I don't think that is the case. But I think that's how it's viewed. I heard somebody say one day, they were saying, they were taking their daughter to the doctor and she had like broken her arm or something like that. And there was like an intern there with the doctor, and they had asked them, or some type of resident, whatever he was, they asked them, the doctor asked, hey, have you ever done this procedure before? And the guy was like, no. He said, well, like, this is too risky. I can't have you in here for this. You know, I need someone that knows what they're doing, right? And he was like, wow, like, imagine if we use that same, you know, that same level of excellence, expectations of excellence for teaching, right? Imagine how much greater it would be if we had that same level of accountability for who we allow to educate our children, our youth, the future of our country, right? And so that's why I think, you know, teachers probably aren't compensated as much, just because the view of the field, right? You feel like anyone can do it. You can drive, even if you drive around the city, there's literally billboards that are like, oh, need a job, become a teacher, right? Like, right. Just come here, right. We'll hire you, right? Yeah. And so that's why I think just the value isn't placed as high, and that's why they probably aren't compensated as much.
I hear you. Well, I had to get that out there, BZ. I wanted to say thank you for your time, my friend. This was an excellent show. I really appreciate you just allowing me to have a few minutes of your day. You know, Dan, I want to let y'all know, I came to this man's house on the weekend, so I really appreciate it, man. Thanks again, BZ. You made it an excellent show.
Thanks for having me, man. Thanks for having me. If anybody out there can increase that teacher compensation, go ahead, do that for your boy, you know? I greatly appreciate it.
Well, JJ, go and hit the people with the facts. Jigga Man.
Yo.
JJ.
Yo.
Where you at, though?
I'm here. Hey. So, episode 5. Yo, these episodes just keep getting better and better, and that's just me being completely honest. You know, this is a really important episode. There were some really important topics discussed here. You know, the part about the compensation for the younger athletes who are in high school and middle school, that was really intriguing just for myself. You know, it's a great idea and all, but, you know, with all the red tape, is it even possible? You know, are we ever going to get to a place where that's a real thing? So just some thoughts I had. You know, last week's numbers for, you know, last episode were our best so far, you know, by, you know, hands down. You know, our audience is growing weekly, and it's really all because of our listeners. Miles and us can only do so much, and we can only share, you know, so much on Facebook every day before it just gets repetitive and people aren't paying attention. You know, so the audience growth is mostly just due to y'all just sharing it and showing people. And we really, really, really appreciate that. The show is going to keep coming every week. So please keep returning and listening. And let's continue these conversations. I also wanted to say rest in peace to Lil Peep. Hope you enjoy the episode and have a great week. Mookie Mel Show out.